Do you want to set your child up for success? Is tutoring out of your budget, or perhaps you're someone like me who just wants to save money on private tutoring? Is this a big school year for your child? You know, maybe they're starting kindergarten or middle school. Maybe there's another milestone coming up. Or maybe your family moved. Oh my gosh, I moved so much when I was growing up. And the kids are starting a new school. Or maybe your child is ahead and just not getting challenged enough in class. Well, IXL Learning is here to help. IXL Learning is a fun online learning program for kids covering math, language, arts, science, and social studies. It's powered by advanced algorithms. IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's right, it is school approved. So make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And How to Be Fine listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/fine. Visit IXL.com/fine to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. Again, that's IXL.com/fine.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hey, By the Book listeners, Kristen here. Did you know that you can receive a weekly By the Book affirmation minisode plus the rules of every book that we've lived by? It's easy. All you have to do is become a member of our Patreon community. To learn more, go to patreon.com/listen to buy the book. Again, that's patreon.com/listen to buy the book, or just look at the episode description from today's show.
The following podcast contains barnyard language and some adult content, so maybe listen on headphones if you're at work or around small children. Now, here's the show.
Hey, Jolenta.
Yes, Kristen.
It has been 1 week since we lived by toxic positivity, and you know what that means.
I am positive that it is time for another By the Book mini episode.
That's right. It's time for another By the Book epilogue. This week, we're looking at the aftermath of living by toxic positivity, keeping it real in a world obsessed with being happy by Whitney Goodman.
And we had lots of listener feedback.
We sure did.
Let's get right into it. Let us start with someone who actually read the book and liked it.
Yes, Lydia says, "This book hit on the discomfort I didn't even really know I had with the overly positive things people say when bad things happen."
Yep. Definitely. Some of you out there were like, "I feel seen," or like, "Ah, finally, I can put my finger on it." But yeah, let's be honest, not all of you who read the book enjoyed it. Meryl wrote in to say, "Kristen was spot on when she said the book had way too many intros and almost no meat. I couldn't even finish the book because each intro just felt like another sales pitch for the author's worldview, when why would I need to be pitched? I'm already reading your book." Very good point. Oh my gosh, Meryl. Meryl, help me put my finger on it. Yeah, it was very much like, I swear this is like a sound theory. And we're like, we know, we bought the book.
Yes. Now, tell us what the theory is and tell us what to do.
Let's get into it. Exactly.
Yes. There's only so many introductions we can handle as readers. But I also understand that maybe Whitney Goodman, when she wrote this book, maybe she read a lot of other self-help books and saw, look, all the other self-help books do this nonsense. I'll do the same thing.
Right. Or she was like, there's just so much about positivity and like positive affirmations. I just need to super, super, super convince anyone who's reading this that, like, they're, you know, headed down the right path. Who knows?
But yes, we already have the book in our hands.
Yes.
That being said, a lot of people did like the book, or at least like the philosophy and position that the author was coming from, even if they hadn't even cracked open the book. For example, Catherine says, I have not read this book, but have received similar advice, mainly in infertility online communities and support groups. It helped me not only to process my own feelings, but to support others going through similar experiences, as well as other types of hardship. For example, my friend who suffers from chronic pain. Additionally, I found comfort in researching and opening myself up to the positives in a range of different possible outcomes, including if my journey ended in something like adoption or no baby at all, rather than putting all my hope into one thing I have no control over. I think it's possible to open yourself up to multiple paths to happiness without being toxically positive.
Yeah, there's a fine line between being upbeat and toxically positive and, like, realistic and, like, toxically negative, I feel like.
Yeah, and a lot of that, of course, is timing and so on. Like,
right.
When are you ready to think about those other possibilities?
Right. There are times where something might feel like a totally viable option and other times where you're like, that is feels such, like, toxic positivity right now. Yeah, yeah. You're right. I never even thought of it that way. Moving on, Matcha wrote in to say, I'm a positive person, and this used to veer into toxic positivity. Everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill you make you stronger, along with the well-meaning diatribes that some Christian churches add in about God teaching a lesson or testing us. Now I acknowledge my feelings more. I am honest with myself when I'm upset or anxious and let myself have that feeling without immediately squashing it away because someone has it worse. I've found ways to acknowledge my upset helps me to actually work through and deal with it. I am still positive on the whole, just it feels more healthy for me this way.
Yeah. And Liz had this to say, I like to think of myself as an optimist, but my 9-year-old is not, and she's just started therapy for anxiety. I have caught myself saying and trying not to say a lot of toxically positive things. It's so hard when she gets worked up about something and all my instincts are screaming, have you tried not being upset? I know it's not helpful, so I'm really grateful to her counselor for helping us both find ways to say things when she spirals that are healthier.
Yep. It's hard.
Yeah. A lot of this echoes what Whitney Goodman is saying in the book. Sometimes those attempts at positivity just are not the right things or not the right timing, or they're just not helpful to people.
Or they're encouraging denial, or they're just something the person's not capable of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
A few of you, though, think toxic negativity is just as bad as toxic positivity. Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Stevie says, I sometimes wonder if things have swung a bit too far in the other direction in the wellness space. Lately, it seems we're all encouraged to sit with our negative feelings, quote, as long as we need to nurture them, to give them all the time and space they need to breathe and live. But for some of us, that easily snowballs into weeks, months, or even years of spiraling, complaining, wallowing, and inaction. To me, that's just as bad as toxic positivity.
Oh, I feel like I deal with that every day. Yeah. Part of me is like, I need to doom scroll on Twitter while it still exists to get all the information I can about all the horrible things everyone's ignoring in the world. But then all of that horrible information becomes so overwhelming that I'm not like compelled to act. I'm not making change in the world. I'm like paralyzed with fear and, like Stevie said, inaction. So, yes, it's possible to swing too far the other way, for sure.
Yes.
Natalia wrote in, while toxic positivity at least tries to give you a way out, toxic negativity definitely wants you immobile or feeling worse. If every comment about your work is negative, it is a slow-moving poison, even if they want to help you improve. Or there are those people that are permanent and passionate complainers, and they project that onto your future. Like, I got accepted to college, and they say, what's the point? You'll waste your money, have debts, and job prospects for academics are worse than ever. All you will do is end up stuck in a dingy flat with roommates and short-term contracts.
Oh, I love those people, the naysayers. Yeah.
Dad,
they can never
is that
be
you?
Happy for you. God yeah. forbid they can be happy for you.
Like,
come on.
I got this. Well, like, it's not a real job. It's not a real book deal. It's not a thing.
Yeah.
Fuck you,
are
Dad.
Are you really, are you really sure that this is a da-da-da?
Yeah. Well, where it's like, wow. And that all that does is tear people down and make them feel like they don't know how to move forward. Like, it helps no one.
Yeah, I know that a lot of folks like that are saying in their minds, like, I'm just trying to give them a reality check.
Right.
Is it a reality check or are you toxically negative?
Right. Or are you just like shooting someone down?
Yeah. And Susan said, no one is immune from pain, not even the most optimistic people. And it's mean, toxic even, to expect that. But if they're too negative and lash out at us, sometimes we have to get away. One old expression that sticks with me is depression is so contagious, it can even be caught over the phone. That's even more sadly true now that our phones carry the news, texts, and photos of social comparisons. No one is joyful all the time. It's not productive to expect it.
Right.
But Mike Wallace, who suffered clinical depression, said, we do owe it to our loved ones to try to be as happy as we possibly can be. And that means getting help, not bringing others down with us.
Yeah, my therapist says that too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, sometimes like you owe it to the people around you to try to not suck the joy out of everything. That can be a first step to just like getting a little unstuck from like deep, deep depression along with lots of work and like medication and on my part at least.
Yeah, just the motivation to not cause pain to others around you.
Right. Or just realizing that your depression and that sort of negative atmosphere like is perhaps causing pain to others. It's not like they're not Teflon. Like it rubs off on people.
Yeah.
But let's move on. Some of you had mixed feelings about the idea of negative versus positive feelings at all. Margaret wrote in to say, I try not to look at emotions as positive or negative. They are reactions to life experiences. That being said, I'm frequently anxious, and when I'm anxious, I can be more pessimistic. If I'm feeling pessimistic, I can't pretend that I'm not and don't want to be talked out of it. But during these times, I also recognize that not everyone wants to hear and deal with me and my feelings, and that's their right. So I try to respect their boundaries and instead meet my own needs or find someone else who's receptive.
Margaret, you sound
so self-aware.
Yes, I was going to say that, like way more self-aware than a lot of us. The fact that you know you tend to go into a pessimistic place and the fact that you know not everybody is required to put up with that. And it's okay if they don't want to and that there are other people you can turn to. I love that, Margaret. Wow. May we all be as self-aware as you.
I know, right? Yeah, I hope I can be.
Yes. And Chris also has mixed feelings about the idea versus positive and negative feelings and toxicity and so on. Chris says, when is a positive slash optimistic outlook a good thing and when does it turn toxic? My stepdad lived to be almost 96. We're coming up on the one-year anniversary of his passing, sadly. And I am convinced that his optimism and general positive outlook contributed to his longevity. My mom, on the other hand, died fairly young and was definitely less positive than he was. I think stress contributed to a lot of her health problems. But that's just my take. It's hard to know for sure.
Stress definitely does contribute to health problems.
Oh my gosh, yeah, high blood pressure, our immune systems and so on.
Totally.
Are affected by stress.
100%. Also, I have to say though, like my grandmother lived to 98 and she was not positive. She was negative. Pushed most of her family members away and lived really old. So, like, I agree with the theory and I agree like stress is hard on our bodies, but also like we can't rely fully on that as a barometer for how long we'll live.
Yeah, I think we probably all have stories that go in both directions there.
Exactly,
We all know jolly, amazing people who've lived to be 100. And then we also know jolly, amazing people who died way too young.
Right, yeah. We're going to take a quick break. Try not to get stressed. When we come back, we'll hear feedback that you guys had about how we lived by the book. Oh, I'm so curious.
There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers, That's more people than there are golden retrievers. Which means Tubi is more popular than using meat-flavored toothpaste. More popular than never figuring out what W-A-L-K spells. More popular than kicking your leg when a human rubs your belly just right. Tubi, it's more popular than golden retrievers. See you in there.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
We are back with listener comments about toxic positivity, and now we have more specific feedback, Jolenta, for you, for me, and for one of the husbands.
Uh-oh. Let's start with you, Kristen, because I always love starting with you.
Thanks.
Okay. Amy says, I thought it was hilarious that Kristen mentioned how poor the writing and how little detail there was in the book, since the steps all sounded so logical and helpful when outlined in the podcast. Amy, that's all Kristen. That is feedback for Kristen in particular. Kristen is the most skilled person I have met at streamlining self-help books, distilling their steps, and putting it in ways that I'm like, wow, wish the book put it this way. That would be way easier to grasp. That's like all Kristen. She's amazing. Since I've been sick, she's really taken up the writing the steps mantle. So like all kudos go to her and my thanks go to her.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm just going to take a moment to shout out our Patreon right now, because a lot of people who are aware of that, a lot of people who've read these books and are like, I cannot figure out heads from tails in this book, have said that they love joining our Patreon because how we write out the rules is more clear. And that is something you get if you join our Patreon community. Every single book we've lived by, the rules as we distilled them.
Expertly written, most likely by Kristen.
Yeah. Yes. The hundreds, if not thousands of hours we've spent getting all of these rules down on paper, you can get those by joining patreon.com/listen-to-buy-the-book. So thank you, Jolenta, for explaining that.
Shameless plug, and also it's all Kristen. Let's move on to this letter from Heather, who says, I may have taken it wrong, but it seemed like Kristen treated positivity and toxic positivity as the same thing. Maybe the author says they're the same, but to me, Kristen's defensiveness felt like having conversations with my conservative-leaning family members about toxic masculinity, and then having them insist that using the term toxic masculinity means society hates men. I'm going to speak for Kristen for a second, and then she can speak for herself. Then she will be allowed. No, I'm sorry.
Okay, thanks, Jolenta.
I was going to say, I think the author barely touches on the positive aspects of positivity to the point where you do start to associate just positivity with being negative, as funny as that sounds, in this book. Like, when you read positivity, you sort of, like, are supposed to be like, So it's very much framed as like, we don't want positivity right now.
Yeah. As I said in the main episode, and maybe I didn't say this clearly enough, so I'll just say it again. The book, a few times in those many intros, there's like three, maybe four intros in the book before we get to the meat of things. In the intro, in the many intros, she has a few different throwaway lines where she says, not all positivity is bad. Positivity done right can contribute to better social networks, improved health, and happiness. And so she has a few throwaway lines like that. And it's like, okay, so you said not all positivity is bad, and when done right, contributes to all these great things. Why won't you tell us what positivity done right means?
Right.
And why won't you do that?
To be honest, we're used to self-help books, I think, that are a bit more verbose and do like to give you sort of the flip side of things and show you how, like, see, if you approach it this way, the way you normally would, it doesn't work out. Where this book doesn't really do that. So we don't learn why positivity would maybe fail us here as much as we learn in other self-help books about like the negative thing negatively impacting our lives. In this case, the negative thing being positivity. Cool.
This really gets to Marcy's point, because Marcy wrote to us to say, I agree with Kristen that it would have been helpful for the book to give examples of healthy positivity alongside all the examples of toxic positivity. But I also think that flies in the face of human nature. Mm. As humans, it's easier to point out what's wrong in life than what's right. We all do it, including self-help authors. Or maybe that's just my negativity talking.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Yeah.
Marcy, I would say that's true. It is oftentimes easier just to point out like, oh, look at this thing that's a problem. Look at this thing's, this thing that sucks. Look at that thing, and not actually look at the thing that is working.
Is like doing well. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, without that, we'd have no change. But also we need to be able to shift our focus and give ourselves sort of a break from all of that, like freaking out from all that, like, shit, this isn't working and that's not working and this is failing us. Like, whew. But let's get to one last thing for Kristen. Lori says, I have a question about this statement that I think I heard Kristen mention on the episode about toxic positivity. Did someone say to her that renting vacation rooms from VRBO or Airbnb contributes to the housing shortage?
Yes, Lori. Somebody did say that in the episode. That was Stephen Thrasher, who wrote The Viral Underclass. But just to give credit where credit is due, he didn't invent that point of view. That point of view has been out there for many years, and many city government officials have for years been trying to pass laws to limit VRBO, Airbnb, and other kinds of rent your apartment to other people, rent your house to other people sorts of microeconomies. Because what has happened in a lot of places is that big investors will come in and they will buy up apartment stock and just use those apartments to make money. But because so many units now are owned by those investors, often investors in other countries outside the U.S., then people who actually live in those towns don't have enough housing stock to rent. And also what remaining stock there is, because of the rules of supply and demand, are infinitely more expensive than they would be if those units were just on the market.
Yeah, you take up more space and are driving the prices up if you're owning multiple properties and renting them out and just trying to make as much profit as possible.
Yeah, short-term rentals in particular.
Then that affects the housing market, like around all of those properties you're renting for too much.
Yes. Yep. But Jolenta, let's get to some feedback for you. We got tons of letters for you this week.
Okay.
Let's start with Shannon. Shannon says, I actually did something similar to Jolenta. 3 months after my mom's very sudden death, when I finally started cleaning out her house, I made a social media post with the picture of my mom's makeup strewn about because she was going to be right back. I wrote in a gentle tone about being mindful of what you say to a grieving person and offered some suggestions of what to do instead. And along the way, I learned some empathy myself when my grief therapist said that many of the statements about being grateful for the way she went and why were really people's projections of their own fears of death and grief, though it still, in my opinion, was toxically positive.
Oh, yeah. That can totally still be toxically positive, but also give you an insight into where the person who's being toxically positive at you is coming from. It shows them they're saying, I'm afraid of this, or like, I wish, you know, I had as much time with my mom as you did, or like, you know, at least she wasn't in the hospital.
It sounds like in this case, a lot of them were saying, I wish my mom wasn't in hospice for 3 years and in pain. I wish she didn't suffer. I wish she did go quickly. And that's, you're right, them projecting their feelings onto you. And that's probably not how you feel at that moment.
No.
I'm sure at that moment you're like, I would have loved 3 years in hospice with my mom just to have 3 years with her.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it doesn't make you feel any better in the moment to remember, like, this is their own baggage when people are being, you know, sort of negating your own feelings. But, like, afterwards, it can help you be, like, in my case, I found at least less angry and resentful of people not being able to, like, properly receive what's going on with me.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to this letter from Tony. Tony says, Jolenta, in a world that asks disabled people to hide our experiences and appearances, thank you for not hiding. It makes a difference. You're a boss bitch.
Thanks. My new hobby is scaring people in public. No, it's really interesting, especially being like the only masked person in public usually at this point in time, just watching people clock my mask first, and then like you can sort of see them like questioning it, and then they'll clock like my cane, and then that will validate it for them. But also just reminding them that like for that split second you didn't see my cane, you were judging me maybe. And like now that you see it, you're judging me less because I'm like an acceptable, quote unquote, disabled person with like a visible disability. It's also fun just being a young person with a cane in public. I get lots of like kids yelling to their mom and pointing, being like, why she had that? And then they can explain. And like it's interesting. The other day I heard a mom be like, remember when mom hurt her back? Sometimes you need something to help you, like, when you're that hurt. And, like, she might need that right now and stuff. And it's like, oh, look, like, we're learning. So, yeah, sometimes it can feel weird being, like, the odd person out, whether it's with a mask, with a cane, just knowing you're sick on the inside. But, like, throwing off people's perceptions has become fun.
Yeah. All right, Jolenta, we have one more question for you, and this is a logistical one from Teresa. Teresa says, I am a mom of two who has lots to say, but has become a dinosaur in terms of digital media. I've taken a few local graphic design courses, but once the course is over, I lose access to the programs and become overwhelmed with what to invest in and fear that I'm doing it the hard and expensive way. To cut to the chase, what programs do you use to create your digital quotes? Do you ever scan your watercolor / calligraphy in, or is it a purely digital process? What's the learning curve? Is it user-friendly?
Oh, wow, Teresa. So I also have no experience with this whatsoever. I have been using Canva, which is a free like multi-platform app. You can pay for like Canva Pro or to use like certain clip art, but I just like work with the limited resources they give you for free. Do I ever scan my watercolor calligraphy? No. That's because I just don't think mine's good enough to scan. I scan it sometimes for like if I'm transferring it to be like an embroidery project, but not for this. I just totally only use Canva. They have templates or you can make your own. The learning curve for me has been a little steep. There was one night where my husband woke up at 4 a.m. and found me like hunched over an iPad. And he's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm a graphic designer now. So it took a while to sort of study it, figure out what my aesthetic is. But it is super user friendly once you figured it all out. It wasn't figuring out how to use the app that kept me up. It was figuring out like what kind of graphic designs do I even like that kept me up. But Canva, that's how I've been doing it. It works well with novices.
So it sounds like it can be learned, but it may get you obsessed and keep you up.
Exactly.
We also, as promised, have a question for one of the husbands, for Brad. Kaylee says, I listen to Start Here every morning. It's my favorite news podcast, in large part because of Brad. Like a lot of folks, I can be easily fatigued by the news, and his positive but still taking it seriously tone is a reason I listen. I want to know, how does Brad not feel crushed by the weight of the news while being steeped in it every day? How does he maintain what sounds like a decent positive attitude and faith in humanity versus a toxically positive one?
So for this, we went right to the source and I asked Brad, and here's what he had to say.
I think what like drives my whole approach towards the news is how it affects real people. And the fact is that while there are a few leaders that we're talking about all the time, the vast, vast, vast majority of this country is like people like you and me who like disagree on certain things, but at our core, we share a lot of the same values. And so even when you run into somebody with like radically different ideas of how the world works or should work, they are much more complicated than you give them credit for. They all have real stories. They all have real pasts. They all have real things that have been like informed their worldview. And I feel like that can and should be respected. And that is kind of what gets me revved up every day, is to go like, huh, this thing that seems so alien to some part of our listener base is totally normal to this other part of our listener base. Why is that? And like, just trying to like scratch that, like scratch at that itch of like, where is the, like, what is the thing we should be trying to understand about each other? Because that's what it is at the end of the day. It's just like understanding each other as much as the events.
Oh, that's a good way to keep the faith a bit in humanity. Yeah.
And then it's like a lot less fraught with like, yes, these are unprecedented times, but like people at their core are still people. And like, if, as long as you can like hold on to that, it helps you want to learn more about things and not bury your head in the sand and go like, this is all, it all seems like too much. So I think that's like what keeps me going.
Thank you, Brad, for sharing your wisdom and insights with Kaylee and with the rest of us. We appreciate it. Brad, always game.
We are going to take one more quick break, but when we come back, we will look at the word toxic and we'll announce next week's book.
There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are in France. Which means Tubi is more popular than cigarettes for breakfast. It's more popular than considering iced coffee a total abomination. More popular than loving political revolutions. More popular than mère and mère somehow being different words. Tubi, it's more popular than being French. See you in there.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
We are back. And now, Jolenta, we're going to look at the word toxic because it turns out a lot of you out there, a lot of listeners, you take issue with the word. A lot of you wrote in just about this word, not even about positivity this week, but just the word toxic.
And you weren't just writing in about the Britney song toxic. You were writing in about the actual word.
Yes.
Natalia says, I think people have forgotten there are more precise words to describe people in favor of toxic. Obnoxious, annoying, nasty, reprehensible, loathsome, egocentric, morally corrupt, and in a German word I used to use a lot, ego pig. Ooh.
I love that word.
I have met some actually toxic people. Being with them too long would literally give me physical symptoms of poisoning, but others are just bothersome and irritating.
Kirsty also takes issue with the word, saying, as a physician, a derivative of toxic, toxin, is my least favorite word. It releases toxins, they say. Really? Better than my liver and kidneys? Please list the exact chemical compounds you are referring to and provide quantitative data that activity over substance X releases them.
Ooh, Christy, getting precise. I like it. So with all of these thoughts floating around about toxicity and what it means to be toxic, Kristen put up a survey on our Facebook community to find out how many of you agree with Natalia and Christy. And hundreds of you voted. And the numbers are in.
Yes, 61% of you said the word toxic is indeed overused, with only 39% of you saying you use the word yourself and you think it applies to many situations. So,
I mean, I think 61% of our users are fucking toxic. I'm kidding. That was a joke.
Jolenta, you just need to do a cleanse to get those toxins out. Get those toxins out of there.
Right. I need to find out their chemical compounds and just deal with it.
Yes, exactly.
You guys aren't toxic. You're all beautiful. thank you so much to everyone who wrote in this week. Reminder, you can always share your thoughts and stories with us on our private Facebook community. It's facebook.com/groups/BTBpod. It's the best Facebook group around.
And now, Jolenta, it's time. It is the time when we announce next week's book.
Our next book is...
The Art of Making Memories by Mike Viking.
Do I have to become an artist to make memories?
Do all the memories have to be art-related?
Wait, didn't we already live by a book by this author?
Listen next week to find out.
And that is it for this mini episode of By the Book. Huge thank you to our fabulous, fabulous production team at Stitcher, Nora Ritchie, Corinne Wallace, and Marcus Hom. Thanks also to Nate Wyda, the composer of our theme song, and to the Rizzos, the performers of our theme song.
Please stay in touch. Let us know if you've read Toxic Positivity. Also, send us any questions or suggestions for future books for us to live by. Our email address is kristenandjolenta@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at JolentaG, at Kristen Meinzer, or at ByTheBookPod. Also, be sure to check out our Instagram. You can see lots of Jolenta's posts there about Toxic Positivity, about Frank, and about lots of other things. That's at ByTheBookPod.
And don't forget to rate us and review us wherever you're listening right this second. Just look down, hit 5 stars, maybe write a few words. It will help other people find the show. It will help us share our toxic positivity with the world. I mean, just our positivity. And of course, tell a friend about the show, because word of mouth is great. Until next time, I'm Jolenta Greenberg.
And I'm Kristen Meinzer.
Thanks so much for listening.
Bye-bye.
Stitcher.
Not everything in life is flexible, but at Capella University, your education can be. With our game-changing FlexPath learning format, you're empowered to fit education into your life without putting other priorities on hold. FlexPath lets you set your own deadlines and adjust them when needed. You can take courses at your own speed and move on to the next one when you're ready. Imagine how a flexible education can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.